Welcome to the podcast for Healing Neurology, where we talk about everything that can help heal your neurology, which is really everything from food, lifestyle, and medicine to nature, culture, and politics. There's no topic too big or too small. I'm Jillian Ehrlich, family nurse practitioner certified in Ayurveda and functional medicine. I'm so excited to share with you today's guest. So she is one of my sisters here in the Ayurvedic community in Seattle. Her name is Tammy Hafsala. She approaches her yoga and Ayurveda practice in the spirit of bhakti, which means devotion. She was born in Cairo, Egypt, to a Coptic Orthodox family and steeped in the traditional and spiritual practices from a very young age. She's been inspired by travels worldwide, and her heart has been deeply touched by witnessing the sweetness of bhakti, devotional acts that align the seeker's heart to the heart of God. There are so many ways to connect with the divine and experience oneness. In a colorful temple puja, in a grand mosque, praying in a luminous cathedral, through poetry, music, art, or quietly sitting in expansive nature. As Rumi shares, let the beauty you love be what you do. There are many ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Yoga and Ayurveda have most nourished and enlivened her, offering space for daily renewal and connection to subtle, peaceful, and sacred essence. Tammy believes that everyone has the capacity to connect to optimal health, inner wisdom, and grace. As a certified Ayurvedic practitioner, she empowers clients towards self-inquiry and insight. Tammy offers Ayurvedic treatments as a gateway to deep relaxation, rejuvenation, regeneration, and radiance. And as a yoga teacher of 22 years, she is adept in holding grounding, compassionate space. She is committed to cultivating a practice that is warm and welcoming to her students to move through their personal process, finding union of body, mind, and heart. They are guided to access profound levels of insight and freedom, reconnecting to inherent wisdom to heal and dissolve barriers that separate us from ourselves and from each other. Ultimately, her intention is to share techniques to align with radiance from the inside out. Connection to self, connection to others beyond name and form, connection to spirit, universal consciousness, and love. Her classes are artfully sequenced, strength building, and meditative. She has taught retreats worldwide. She is the co-founder and co-director of Synergy Yoga School and has led teacher trainings in Seattle and in India. It's been a blessing to study with many masterful teachers in India, Australia, Europe, and the US. In addition to specializing in Ayurvedic massage, she also offers therapeutic massage integrating myofascial release, neuromuscular, Lomi Lomi, Swedish, Reiki, and craniosacral techniques. For many years, she was an active doula, and today she serves the birthing community by offering prenatal and postpartum massage. Tammy's greatest teacher is her beloved son, Indy Kainoa. From him, she has learned the greatest love, patience, and joy of being embodied, alive, and awake in the present moment. What a blessing to be on this unending journey of renewal and transformation. You can learn more about Tammy at her website, bhakti-flow.com, and I'll spell that out, www.bhakti-flow.com. Tammy, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Jillian.
Oh, it's such a pleasure. And I don't usually do as long a bio intro, but yours is just like poetry. I mean, it's like healing to hear your bio. And I feel like that's how patients feel about seeing you in practice and being in your yoga classes. And I hope that's how our listeners feel. I know that's how I'll feel in having this conversation today.
Oh.
So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us. All right. So let's start at the beginning, because having the beginner's mind, having that flexible mind is such a gift in having a conversation about everything we just discussed actually in your bio. So let's start at the beginning and tell us, what is yoga?
Yeah. So to me, I really do view it as this process toward union. And that is the definition of it, coming from like a root word of huge, which actually has a couple meanings, like to unite, but also to concentrate. Mm. And so, I really love that aspect of it. When I think of it, I think of first the union piece of uniting body, mind, spirit, body, mind, soul, consciousness, heart, you know, just these aspects of ourselves. Mm-hmm. And then as well, the mastery of the mind itself. Mm-hmm. And the ability to concentrate. And that is, we learn so often in yoga, this one-pointed awareness. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times it's the breath, or it could be a mantra. It could just be something for the mind to steady itself with. Mm-hmm. And then through that, you know, we take the physical postures, or, you know, enhance ourselves in more of a meditative state of awareness. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, aligning ourselves to ourselves ultimately, but then it goes deeper. It goes then to each other, and it goes to the earth, to all living beings, to creation, to universal consciousness. So for me, that's been my journey and how, yeah, it started, you know, really by just exploring the physical, as many of us do. And then it went deeper into the more subtle realms. Yeah. And I can share a little bit about that too.
Yeah, I'd love to hear kind of how you found yoga.
Yeah. So, I mean, a couple ways, and it was really interesting for me to actually think about this. So really, I've always been intrigued by the mind. And when I was little, always asking, you know, but why is that person like this? Or why is life like this? You know, actually, I would ask these kinds of questions to my parents, just kind of the nature of life and living. So, and just always reflective and contemplative. And so then by the time I was in college age, it was such an organic, natural thing to study psychology. This is what I studied, and I had the intention of becoming a therapist. And so when I was in college and loving all the classes and really enjoying, and then, you know, one fine day realizing I need to take statistics to graduate several rounds.
Fine day.
Yep. And I remember really like this didn't come naturally to me. This wasn't my expertise. Like I've never been a mathematician, nothing like this. So much more the art kind of realm of existence is where I go and with people. And so I remember really going to my career counselor and wanting to share my concerns or my fears around, like, will I even be able to complete my studies, or how do I pass statistics, or what do I do? And I think I must have really shared in maybe a state of anxiety and sharing about test anxiety as well. And he was the first to say, you know, did you know that you can actually calm yourself and do, you know, he must have observed that I was really heightened or something. And he started to share, like, you know, you can breathe deeper. You can actually, there's something called biofeedback. There's something called Tai Chi. There's something called yoga. He just listed ways of calming. And for whatever reason, my mind was just like, yoga, what is yoga? For whatever reason, I have no idea why, but that stuck for me. And then I took my first class in the basement of a YMCA in Bellingham. I was going to Western at the time, and just this tiny, funny yoga class in a basement of the community place. And it, something did stick, and it was interesting enough to me that I thought, I want to actually take this in a studio setting. So then I started, and just once a week, and I knew nothing about it besides like how much like I felt awkward and strange in these postures. And it was really new and really foreign. And at the same time, really intrigued by this beautiful woman who was teaching and the way she carried herself and her light and her grace, you know, even this certificate on the wall of her studies in India, you know, whatever it is, I was just definitely intrigued. And then as time went on, and I was literally only going once a week, and I was having my college studies, and I was having my lifestyle in college. And so, you know, just dabbling really, but something was definitely planting a seed. And I always have this profound memory of a day in which I was being guided to stand in mountain pose. And at the time I'm thinking, wow, we're just standing here, you know, and wow, this teacher is really talking. And then at some point, I'm really listening to what she's sharing, and she's sharing about rooting her feet and lifting the spine and the heart and the crown, and just this balance of us, you know, in this physical body, but living between an ethereal realm and an earthly realm. And something really resonated, and I just had tears streaming down my cheeks. And I just remember something really touched my heart. And then I thought, I want to know more about this. And then just time went on, and I was still on the path of like, I'm getting my degree. I'm going to get my master's degree. I even was working for a few years in my field in Bellingham. And then I was actually in my opening circle. And all this time, I'm only taking yoga like once a week, you know, dabbling here and there, doing a little bit of home practice. Still, it wasn't like my full blown, like I haven't devoted myself yet to this. And then when I was in this opening circle in my master's I was slated to take a master's in Antioch University here in Seattle. And I was sitting there and I was looking around me and I was thinking, everyone here is twice my age. Everyone here, you know, they've had maybe a career shift or they now have kids that are going back to school or whatever, you know, like it's just, it was a time where I recognized I wasn't ready to commit to those studies. Mm-hmm. And then I decided to travel. And then through the traveling, carrying a heavy backpack, and then through the heavy backpack, like coming back to yoga and doing these stretches. And, you know, it just sort of led me, but it took so many years. Like I took my first class in Bellingham in 93 and my first teacher training was in 2000. So it was a long time of finding my way to make that decision that I want to study more. Mm-hmm. And initially it wasn't even about teaching. It was just about knowing it and understanding it and becoming more intimate with the philosophy. Mm-hmm. And so that's really how it came to me. And my first training was residential, just living in kind of an ashram setting in Australia, actually. And then through that, it just, yeah, it got deeper and deeper, my relationship with it. And what I discovered was I had spent so much time in the realm of psychology. And even I was reflecting, one of my college classes was actually entitled Thinking About Thinking. And I thought, wow.
That's not the way we operate.
No, I'm really caught in the mind, you know?
Yeah.
And I thought yoga came to liberate me. You know, I was there. I was in the mind. I was in analysis. I was in the stories, in my story, in other people's stories. Like I was wrapped up. And then I recognized like yoga was there to liberate me from all that. So yeah, that's really how it came. And then I thought I can serve people in a really different way. My intention, my initial intention to be of service and to share and to help, you know, shine light, it came in a really different way than what I initially had thought in my 20s, you know?
It's so interesting to think about, to hear your story and think about, to see how much yoga moves you now and to realize how long it took for you to get there, to find that as kind of your life path. It really speaks to the fact that different things speak to us at different points in our life and that what's right for us at one moment might not be right the next moment, or what's not right for us yet is absolutely going to become the thing we care most about in the future. It's so interesting. It makes me think of my early yoga days. You know, yoga is where I started as well into these kind of Hindu sciences, yoga and Ayurveda. And I did like an overnight thing from school. And they had a woman, I was 14, and they had a woman teaching yoga in some big room. And she actually was wearing all white and she had a white head wrap. And so I didn't, but as I started stretching in these poses, I'm so hypermobile that I was never good at sports, but I really excelled in yoga because I could really, you know, stick the legs everywhere and stick the arms everywhere. And I thought, yeah, this is my thing. Like I'm just a natural. And it took me, you know, I loved it and I continued it, but I didn't know where to access it there in the 80s. And then it took me years until I was at the Ayurvedic Institute in 2000 with Chitra Jiak. I don't know if you ever knew her on the Ayurvedic, but she's a phenomenal. She had been at Mount Madonna for 7 years. And then she was at the Ayurvedic Institute running their yoga program. Mm-hmm. But with her for, you know, teachers to start saying to me, like, you know, you're overstretching your joints. That's actually not the pose. That's not an actual true alignment. You can't rely on your joints. You really have to back off the joints and let everything align as opposed to just stretching your joints. And so it's really fascinating to see how we kind of come to these things. And, you know, in some ways it's kind of exciting to think about what's tomorrow, you know, we know these things now, we feel like we have found our gig, but you know, in 20 years, we might and probably will revolve again.
Yeah. Yeah. That is really something I love contemplating, actually. Mm-hmm. Just what else am I interested in, you know? And like, even if you started now, like you're saying, you might even have 20 years to practice a new thing too.
Yeah.
And also just how these Vedic sciences have so many branches.
Uh-huh.
Like it really could be yoga. It could be Ayurveda. It could be, you know, the philosophical texts, it could be chanting, it could be the music. Like there's so many pieces the Vedic wisdom, and I love it. It could be astrology, you know, like there's just so many pieces. And then blending it with West is very cool as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And so, and yours is really through bhakti, through devotion. So talk to us about what bhakti is, what it means, why it speaks to you.
Yeah. So, I think I love this idea of just devotion in general. Like I feel devoted on so many levels in so many pieces of my life. Like I'm devoted, you know, to my practice. And that was sort of the entry of this idea of devotion. Like just, I have a commitment to myself to show up, you know, and even if that means it's a child's pose today, or, you know, it's just a mindfulness on my breathing because I really can't get to the mat today, or, and we can speak to that too with the parenting piece for sure. But just the truth of living in the world and society and a householder, like the truth of that, we can't always just spend all the hours of the day doing these beautiful high states of awareness, you know, having that. And so, I mean, I'd love to be there, but it's not the truth of this life, you know? And
sometimes you have to wrestle your toddler into pants.
It's true. That's exactly what needs to happen. The bath, the brushing the teeth, the bedtime, you know?
Yeah.
And, but I've always been inspired. And I think like I grew up, you know, very much with spirituality as a touchstone in our family. And my dad always, you know, would talk about faith and God and prayer. And so these were like anchors for me throughout my life, like always, like just second nature, just to have a conversation with God in my mind, even. So then as I traveled, witnessing all of the ways toward spirit, I think I was always in awe of seeing, you know, the ancient pyramids and how that felt like a effort to reach God, or, you know, in the Greek mythology and temples in India, in the mosque, like, you know, just having been blessed to have adventures in these places around the planet and seeing people in their devotional acts. I think I was really, one of the things that touched me early on was thinking about like being in the Arab world and seeing how Muslims genuinely take time 5 times a day to pray. And you hear the mosques everywhere when you're in places, or in India, and you would go to a puja and you'll just see the people take the time and do these rituals with the gods and goddesses. And I think somehow when I've been in the West, I sometimes think, wow, you know, I wish there was more of a cultural way to celebrate the divine. And in all its forms and all its names, whatever that means to each soul, you know, because we all have our own image of what that is for us. It could be earth. It could be, you know, playing music and you find some kind of oneness there. You could be gardening. You know, there are so many ways that we find a deeper sense or a deeper connection, taking a walk on a trail and a hike in the mountain and the sea, you know? And so I think for me, I'm always hungry for that union. And so I think there is like this devotion of trying to come back, like just to find my way back always to that oneness. And so for me, it's come through yoga and Ayurveda both. And then of course the devotion to my family and to my son. And because now it's also evolved, you know, there was a time I'm young, free and single and traveling and exploring these gorgeous sciences before I had my son. And then, you know, having had him, it really anchored me in a different kind of way. But then how can I still find these heightened state and still be a mama and be grounded and take him to school when it's time and get him like what we just said, like all the things on the checklist. How are we going to, you know, coexist with both states of awareness? And even I reflect a lot, you know, Jack Kornfield has this book, you know, After the Ecstasy, the Laundry. And
that is,
even that title alone is like a mantra.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. So I love that.
Yeah. I'm writing it down because I need that right now. This is, yeah. And so maintaining that mindset, you know, I can see how your mind continues to come back to that level of devotion. And, you know, in yoga, you're welcome to speak to this. There's so many different types of yoga. So there's bhakti yoga is one type. There's Raj yoga, which is kind of Raj for king or royalty. Mm-hmm. There's hatha yoga, the poses. Can you talk a little bit about kind of the different types of yoga? And I'm asking this question mainly as a way to illuminate how bhakti is a little bit unique or different.
Yeah. So I think a lot of times, like with bhakti, for example, I think if we were in India, it would probably be like just loads of chanting and more of that kirtan kind of ritual prayer and, you know, singing the names of God, essentially. Mm-hmm. And I love that so much. And at the same time, I think my particular blend or my idea of bhakti is also within the physical postures too, which is hatha yoga, like you named that. And hatha essentially is just the physical postures and balancing, you know, ha and tha, the moon and solar, like the lunar solar within ourselves, masculine, feminine within ourselves. Like it's a balancing of our energies. And with the physical postures, there's so much that balances. There's so much energetically, physically on our muscles. You know, that's part of what I love about the physical postures and why it's such a gateway to the deeper realms. Because just for any person, just breathing a little deeper, reducing stress, getting into a parasympathetic state, stretching your muscle tissue, you know, already we feel better. And so we don't even need to go to the esoteric states either. And this is also how I try to meet my students and clients is, you know, just everyday language. Mm-hmm. And then if they wish to take it into another level, we can, or we can really talk about stress reduction and just breathing deeper and stretching. So yeah, there's the hatha yoga physical postures. There's bhakti, raja, as you said, jnana yoga is the spiritual study of the texts. Mm-hmm. Like, in fact, I have a teacher who I've worked with in the past who she doesn't even do asanas, the physical postures. She only studies the sutras, the Bhagavad Gita, you know, these ancient scriptures. And in fact, she can read and write in Sanskrit. And for her, that is her deep alignment. So if we go back to the idea of yoga being the balancing of body, mind, and consciousness, it's all about how do you get there? And so it's, do you do so by chanting? Do you do so by stretching? Do you do so by studying? You know, so there are many ways we can get there. And it can, again, come off the mat too. It can also just, do we breathe deep when we're in nature? Do we chop the vegetables mindfully? You know, so we can be doing yoga all the time, you know, finding that mindfulness really of the mind, body, and spirit, you know, where am I in space kind of thing? Where am I in my consciousness? Where am I in my heart, you know?
Yes. You know, wrestling your toddler into pants. Where
your deep breath and your extra patience. Oh my God.
But, you know, seeing there's a way, you know, in which even in those moments, we can have gratitude for this experience. You know, we have experiences of comfort and experiences of discomfort, but all of them are things that we get to experience. And it is better than not being here. You know, you get to watch the show unfold.
Yeah. And it's always like a teaching, you know, for me, when I am challenged by my son too, I think of it like, wow, you know, like what can I do to meet this moment? Or if I didn't meet it gracefully, I will reflect and think, okay, how about next time? How can I, you know, do that again in a different way?
Yeah.
Or even talk to him about it. I mean, now he's 12, so we can actually really talk about like, okay, how do we make amends for that moment and what can we do differently? So, you know, it's always a learning. It's always a beginner's mind. And one of my favorite mantras actually is begin again. It really is. And I think about that constantly because, you know, imperfection is our human. It's how it is, you know?
Yep.
It's just...
And you've talked a lot about kind of different faiths as we've discussed yoga so far. And I'm just curious for listeners out there who subscribe to a more monotheistic faith, like Christianity or Islam or even Judaism, how do you blend or can you blend yoga as a devotion with those religions?
Yeah, I love this question. It's beautiful because yoga is known as a spiritual science. Mm-hmm. So it's beyond religion too. And so that's why it's all encompassing in a way. Like ultimately, it's about oneness. And so it's however you that is for you. It's really can be personalized mm-hmm. individually or even within a faith. Mm-hmm. And so if you love chanting the names of God, for example, you can chant them in any language or with any devotional symbol, your idea of what or whom God is. Mm-hmm. And so I believe, in my personal opinion, that it's beyond religion. It's spiritual in a way, like religious. You know, I believe that, you know, we have organized religion and people resonate with their group or their lineage or their culture, however they do their family system, whatever it is for each individual. And then yoga can just enhance that even because it offers you quiet space. So it can be contemplative, it can be prayerful, it can be just simply breath, you know, it could be just kind of emptying the mind. I mean, it can be so personalized and it can be purely physical. It can be more energetic or just strength building or more active. So there's so many ways that it doesn't always even have to go to a meditative. I mean, often it leads you there because we have the breath piece. So the mind gets quiet. So that's part of like that meditative, quieter awareness. But yeah, so it can be anything for anyone, I believe.
Wonderful. Wonderful. So there's no kind of limit on where yoga can go in terms of religion or faith, even as a devotional practice.
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, it was born in India, but it's for everyone. You know, that's how I was taught by my teachers, that it was, you know, just like Ayurveda too, you know, we can share Ayurveda, but even apply kind of Western herbs even if we wanted to, you know, it doesn't have to always be these Indian herbs that we can't pronounce.
know? Like happy ketchu, my favorite Marathi word.
Yes. There's so many of there. She's like, wow, how am I going to prescribe that if I can barely pronounce it to my client? So, you know, but that's what I love. It's just like, oh, does that have a cooling quality? Does this person need this or that? Like it can be peppermint for someone, you know, but it's still coming from an Ayurvedic lens of, you know, for whom will it serve? And so I think yoga is the same. And I think ultimately it's just this sort of ancient earth wisdom. Yeah. And Ayurveda and yoga, you know, born side by side. So yeah, they have a lot to share for all.
We've talked about Ayurveda before on this podcast and on our website and with patients, but Ayurveda being the traditional medical system of India, talk to us about how and why it's considered a sister science of yoga.
Yeah. So just born in that ancient Vedic sort of tradition and documented in the same ancient scriptures. And then as well, sharing kind of the same philosophy of origin, you know, and the Samkhya philosophy. And the main thing that I see is this paradigm of body, mind, and spirit balancing these aspects with an effort toward liberation or moksha. So this is for those that are drawn to Ayurveda and or yoga, there's this idea of just having peace or like ultimately like this word liberation, like freedom. And it's freedom from ailment. It can be freedom from ailment in the body. We just feel better when we're doing some of these practices. And we just feel better when we're, you know, creating quiet space for the mind in a yoga practice or just stretching our limbs. And so there really is a sense of freedom. And maybe we're creating more space between the thoughts and the mind. And like what we talked about before, if we're in the realm of psychology and we're just, you know, spinning around with our stories, maybe these traditions like offer us, you know, just letting go of that.
Kind of an exit map.
Yeah, you get to just be in the here and the now. And there is a sense of liberation with that. So I love this idea of liberation and coming from a body, mind, spirit paradigm. And they share that. That is definitely how that sisterhood is. Maybe the way in which they approach it is slightly different. So with yoga, traditionally, it's an ascetic sort of path, you know, like one may live in an ashram setting, or one may live solo as a hermit even, and just practice, you know, and maybe eat really simply, maybe fast to become a little bit lighter and higher states of God consciousness. Like this would be a real traditional way of yoga. The way it's been translated to us in the West is much more physical, and it has more to do with stretching, and it's not the same. Like we wouldn't typically go away to the mountaintop in the same way maybe some traditional Indian yogis might, but that's the beauty of Ayurveda coming in and side by side with yoga. Is the way I personally perceive Ayurveda is it can be a householder path. We can, you know, really eat well and think about how we're nourishing ourselves and nourishing our family. And we can really live in the world and be practicing a life of Ayurveda. And yoga is one piece of a full, holistic, all-encompassing Ayurvedic lifestyle. So yoga can be unto itself. Like with yoga, you're kind of off, and even you're not even barely caring about what you're eating or how you're sleeping, because you're just practicing. Maybe, you know, breath work, the pranayama, or you're practicing the asanas. So you're really just spending a life of that if you were really just only devoted to yoga. But with Ayurveda, yoga is just one piece. And an Ayurvedic practitioner or doctor might just give you a handful of postures only, and or 20 minutes of practice only, but with a combination of other things to do. And so that's how I see the difference and the similarity too, like the similarity of the sharing that body, mind, spirit paradigm and moving toward a state of wellness and liberation. But then the difference of one might be more toward kind of an ascetic path that is, you know, that's those states of ecstasy where maybe you are in a, living away from society versus one that you're fully engaged in society. Yeah. Ayurveda allowing us that more engagement. Yeah.
Excellent. Yes. Ayurveda is that medical system, has eight branches to it and includes pediatrics. It includes mental health. It includes toxicology. It includes what typically gets translated as virilization, or so, you know, older people still can remain sexually active and engaged in life. I mean, there's a whole various host of, surgery is another branch. You know, it really covers all aspects of life, living, health, birth, death, everything. So fascinating. So that is Ayurveda. So Ayurveda and yoga. And so can you talk a little bit about like how learning Ayurveda has changed your approach to yoga?
Yeah, for sure. So when I was first studying yoga, and as I shared, I was young, free, and single in those days. So I was definitely practicing a lot. Like I loved yoga so much. I could just do it for hours, you know, just happily, you know, self-practice or going to teachers or going on retreat or just really diving in and loving all aspects of it, wanting to study all styles of it. And so I was really practicing, for hours and getting up in the wee hours of the morning and, you know, also exploring like, you know, just living in these different communities too with friends that were also aspirants of yoga and exploring like, what would it be like if we just ate raw food? And what would it be like if we just ate, had green juice, you know, and did these really heavy practices? And so when we had a training and this guest teacher came for a 2-month period to share some Ayurvedic wisdom with us, and I was listening and I was really drawn in. And it was the first time I was really thinking about what's my constitutional type or what's my origin at birth, or what's my current imbalance? Like, I'm studying myself and thinking, wow, I don't think I should be eating these raw salads all the time. And well, that's not actually serving me. And well, I do feel that in my body, that it's not the thing. And, you know, I feel overheated somehow when I'm doing this or that in my yoga practice. And then I was watching others around me and I'm thinking, wow, maybe these practices aren't suitable for some others around me as well. And that was how I started to awaken to the idea that not one practice fits all. Because in an effort to have wellness, people do explore yoga. And there is a plethora of styles out there. And if you land in a class that even you might like, and we know this, you know, special saying in Ayurveda that like is attracted to like and can aggravate. What we sometimes are drawn to isn't always the best thing for us. Yeah. So some people that are fiery really do love hot yoga. And it might not be the best thing. And so the more and more we learn it about ourselves with the lens of Ayurveda, then for sure we can make all choices, you know, lifestyle choices, but for sure the yoga practice too. And that's what happened for me. It was just, I was recognizing I need more soothing, grounding practices. I don't need always to do many hours of asana. Maybe I do include meditation instead, restorative yoga instead, you know, just some things to nourish and still have, you know, strength building and still have flexibility included in that. But maybe the recipe looks a little bit different. So yeah, that was sort of how it came for me. And this is what I aim to impart for students as well, just sharing with them, you know, more holistic.
And so when you teach yoga, do you like look at the Ayurvedic constitution of your students, or do you kind of give customizations based on that? How does that work?
Yeah, it's not always easy in group classes for sure. Yeah. But my aim is to, I think about just a nourishing practice that's well-rounded. Mm-hmm. So often I will always include some kind of seated meditation, some kind of, it's probably more of a gentle breath work and some kind of restorative posture. And then I still want people to move their bodies and have a nice flow in their practice and some strength building. And I just give lots of options for those things. And I aim to educate people about things seasonally. For example, like if they're coming to just group classes and it's more random, you know, I can only share so much, but I still aim to share. But then of course there's workshops and in-depth trainings that I share. And that's when people really learn more and then they can take that to their practice. So as people grow with it, you'll see all kinds of changes people make by themselves, you know, just like I did. You know, they just will have that inner awareness and then they'll make choices. And sometimes I just simply share, even you can be more of a fiery person in a fiery practice and it's all in your approach. So let's say, you know, this fiery pitta person, and but they're just, you know, maybe they're keeping their eyes closed or they have downcast eyes and maybe they're not taking every single vinyasa that's offered, you know, they are holding in a child's pose. So even you can be in a class that's for anyone at all levels, any studio, but if you have awareness, you can modify and adapt, you know. So that's what I try to share. And I'll share that generally too, like, oh, it's sunny day, it's hot today. If you're feeling a little warm, overheated, let's just all take child's pose right now. Or, you know, there's ways that one can frame it too that is just a welcoming like invitation to try something different, maybe. You don't always have to jump around.
That's how Ayurveda and yoga can kind of work and add to support each other. One of the ways that you and I have connected is around being parents. You know, my son is 7, your son is 12. And so let's talk a little bit about like you had all this knowledge going into parenthood and then you had the baby. How did that transition go for you? What was that like?
Thank God I had all that knowledge going into parenthood. Yeah. Thank God. And I was blindsided, right? Like it's both. Yeah. So, I mean, I had my baby and I'd already had, I felt like I had really a full life of traveling, exploring yoga. I had taken one of my Ayurvedic courses, like the second one came a little bit later. But yeah, it was basically when he was born, even throughout the pregnancy, I just kept perceiving it as this is my practice. And this is my practice and my body's changing and this is my practice. And that was really interesting to, I was still teaching quite a bit when I was pregnant and I taught all the way up until my due date. And then he was 2 weeks late. So I really was quite pregnant and teaching and just, you know, even watching myself guide students to these practices that I could no longer do in my own body. So already there was a surrendering with that. And then during the birth itself, just there was so much breath awareness that I had that I don't think I would have had had I not had my practice. And I do attribute his birth. You know, I was able to have a home birth. And I really believe it was because I was able to have some kind of mastery over my mind and not get too fearful. Like, I mean, there was times. Yeah. So I feel like yoga gave me the grounding to even just go through that birth process. And then when he was a baby and he was nursing for hours and hours, as you know, they do that. And there's no, just like even a shower is quite a feat, you know? And so there is no just hopping on my mat for an hour or, you know, just exploring even the Abhyanga for myself, you know, but I just would do what I could, you know, and I remember just nursing him and chanting. And I remember nursing him and doing Ujjayi breath. And I remember there would be times where I thought, this is what I can do. This is my practice today. Or just staring at his face and being really present with that. And just being present with him, you know, in all times of it, middle of the night or, you know, changing the diaper or this or that. Like I remember the infancy, just really finding that mindfulness because there was also times of having many hours alone with the baby, as you know, there, you know, you can sometimes feel isolated as a new mom. So that was, you know, kind of the infancy. And then as well, there was times where I would, you know, when he was tiny too, I actually did have some, you know, Ayurvedic practitioner, my dear friend, Sarah, that we know, come and give me Abhyanga at home. And he would just nurse on the massage table. And, you know, he's like finally taking a nap and I would hop on my mat and do a little asana, you know? And so there's times I would just integrate it and sneak it in when I could. And then as he got older and I started teaching again, I would actually take him with me, not into the community classes around Seattle, but on retreats. Like his first overseas trip with me was 8 months old and I taught in Italy and he came with me at 15 months old to India. And then it just started like that. I just would take him along and teach and he just became a part of it. And it was all up until the pandemic, my last retreat and he was there too, was 2019.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I liked that he could also know me as a yoga practitioner and teacher yoga, you know, and that he, you know, he's eaten plenty of khichdi in his day too.
The split mung dal with spices that we recommend for doing Ayurvedic Panchakarma or detox cleansing procedures and is the recommended food for when your digestion is struggling. If your health is struggling, then khichdi is often the way to go. Yeah. Yummy.
Exactly. Yummy. I integrate him. That was how my intention has always been. At the same time, you know, now he's 12 and he doesn't want to have a thing to do with any of it, you know? I'm just like, you really should stretch before you go to baseball practice. You know, it really will serve you. Just a forward bend. Try that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You know, there's no time. He's just, you know, so it is interesting to let them be them too. And, and my hope always is just that I have planted some seeds in him of mindfulness and
absolutely
on different levels.
And so what services are you currently offering for patients?
Yeah. So I have a couple community classes out in the world, which is lovely. And then I have a home studio here that's limited to small group classes for yoga. And then for Ayurveda, I practice Abhyanga and Shirodhara, these different Ayurvedic treatments. Mm-hmm. I see people for a consultation in person or on Zoom, either way. And I can do as well private yoga at request, as requested, and Panchakarma guided cleanses. I can facilitate those or customize even people, you know, even you don't have to go through a whole Panchakarma process necessarily, but we can do a day-long rejuvenation kind of day, or we can do, you know, a few days kind of thing, just so that people can get a taste of the different, you know, possibilities.
Yep. And just to circle back around, can you talk to us a little bit about kind of what your next steps are? What are the things you're curious about next?
Yeah. I love gardening. Uh-huh. And I really have always wanted to go a little deeper with it. So I just have, you know, just small garden with veggies, herbs, this kind of thing, and flowers. I really love flowers. Mm-hmm. But I want to study maybe biodynamic gardening or permaculture. I'm curious about those things. Mm-hmm. And just to learn a little more. Intimacy. Mm-hmm. I have a little more intimacy with it. Mm-hmm. And then I love art. And there was a time I used to paint and draw quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And I've been really away from it for a good, probably since I think yoga came and the art went away. Uh-huh. I would love to come back to that someday in my life. So I see that for myself as well. And then I think always I will teach on some level and share Ayurveda on some level. Yeah. And I have a fantasy and prayer that I will divide my time between Maui and Northwest.
Ah.
So perhaps having space there where I can have residential offerings. Yeah. Create my own little retreat center.
Hawaii is a nice place to live.
Yes.
And a nice place to be. That's fantastic.
Yeah. In Arabic, we say inshallah, if God is willing.
Yes. Yes.
So we'll see.
Yep. We'll see. Pandemic willing, like all these things. So anything else you'd like to share with our audience, with our listeners out there? We've really talked about what is yoga? What was your draw to it? How each of us comes to yoga differently. The poses and the mindfulness and the breath work, all the different aspects, devotion, knowledge, study of scripture. We've talked a little bit about Ayurveda and how it's a sister science of yoga and how it can really sharpen and illuminate our yogic practice, just as a yoga practice can sharpen and illuminate our living, our life, our how we are in our Ayurvedic lifestyle and understanding of ourself. And then we've talked a little bit about the parenting aspects and how being a parent really does, it's the singular most, I think, demanding time in a person's life in terms of round the clock demand. You know, we can have jobs that require things of us, but, you know, there's nothing like getting up in the night or sitting, you know, for years, like a newborn.
Yeah.
I guess, except for two newborns. So,
yes, that is true.
At least in my life, there's been nothing else that has required I delay my personal needs. And what I'm talking about with personal needs is not like to watch a show, but to like use the bathroom or have a glass of water, like those elements, you know, like having a baby. And so, you know, having that be working that into a practice is a brilliant way to look at it.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can end actually with a quote that I really love.
Ooh, uh-huh.
I can share that with you. Mm-hmm. Because this has touched my heart and it's one of the things I reflect on when I, you know, the wife, the mother, this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's by Thich Nhat Hanh. Mm-hmm. And he writes, "I enjoy taking my time with each dish, being fully aware of the dish, the water, and each movement of my hands. I know that if I hurry in order to go and have dessert, the time will be unpleasant, not worth living. That would be a pity, for every second of life is a miracle."
Beautiful. Great. Well, thank you so much for joining us today here on the podcast for Healing Neurology. We've got lots of ways that you can continue the conversation with through Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. You can get more information about Tammy at her website, Bhakti, Bhakti, center-flow.com or about us at centerforhealingneurology.com. Be sure to share this show with your friends. We welcome your rating and review wherever you get your podcasts, and feel free to send podcasts, topic requests, or guests to podcast@centerforhealingneurology.com. We love that you've joined us today to discuss how to make our whole world medicine. We rise or fall together, and we're committed to doing what we can to make as many of us as healthy as possible. And this takes all of us, including you. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Party Fish Media acknowledges that it operates and records on Indigenous Duwamish and Puget Sound Coast Salish land that is still home to the Duwamish tribe. This land is stolen in violation of the Point Elliott Treaty of 1855. We are committed to uplifting the name of these lands and community members from these nations who reside alongside us. For more information on this land, its people, or ways you can help, visit duwamishtribe.org.